Right, we're back for another episode of Counterpoints. Obviously, it's just going to be me and Maniac for this one, as is actually the usual way. I'm going to try on this show, if people don't know, to make guests like more sparingly, or actually, I think the best angle is probably if I have a specific topic I thought they'd be really interested to talk about or get into some particular thing. Because like, if people don't know, the only downside to having guests is it can actually sometimes mean like too much of the show is just based on what the guest wants to talk about, or even worse, you then talk about something that it's not their specialty and then they just can't join in. So I feel like it does also make it a bit awkward. And also, I will say, like, I think we had Yanko on with pretty good timing. Like, if we had him on now, I'd just have to bring up all that Nico stuff again, which technically he never has to address. Because I will say, one thing, actually, let's just start there. We're good at tangents on these shows, mate. I will ask you one question at the beginning, Maniac, because here's one thing I think's a bit weird. When Kassad and Yanko play defense for Nico, when what happens is, right, you have to understand, guys, the annoying thing about this, because you'll have seen recently, like, it was a post between, I'm trying to think who the first person was. I think it was someone famous. It was some sort of an analyst commenting on the idea that, like, maybe it was even Banks or someone. Someone suggesting that, like, Nico had some say in, like, Nexa joining or leaving the team, or, like, G2 now or JKS leaving, right? And what happens is this. I can tell from knowing people, like knowing Yanko and knowing how people address stuff online, really what Yanko's addressing when he fights back against that is sort of like not what that person's seeing. It's the wider implication that fans have, which goes like Nico decides, it's essentially what Stupid Overdrive said, like Nico decides everything in his teams, and if someone joins, he decided, if he kicked him, and they look, you know, they just make the team how he wants. So the joke is they make it like God Emperor Nico. He can just do whatever he wants. Whereas like the problem that Yanko has is this, he's pushing back against that by saying like, no, he doesn't do that, he doesn't have that power, and he just gets input like everyone else. But the issue here is this, because I've realized Twitter is a terrible medium for explaining some of these things, because people get too lost in it, like I say, what they think you mean by that, and what you are, you're saying, and it's never what you actually said. So what I'll explain is this is the problem between the two positions that I feel like Yanko either doesn't get or he just doesn't address, which goes like this. First of all, even if in the team, no one ever said anything to any of the players, and they all did get asked by, I don't know, the general manager, could be the Pekka guy, could be someone, back in the day, maybe it was Carlos from G2, maybe it's just the coach, maybe it's like, currently, obviously, the Taz, obviously in the past, X-Taz, all those people, right? What happens is, even if they really do just go to Nico and then Monacy and then JKS and go, hey guys, what's your input on the team? Who do you think we should sign? What do you think we should do? Even if you did it equally, right? First of all, the obvious thing is, Maniac, as Pekka or Carlos or Taz or X-Taz, you're not really going to treat all the input equally though, in the same way as like if you're in an Arsenal team 20 years ago and Thierry Henry tells you, I think we should do this, and then a random right back that you've had in the team for 3 weeks. It doesn't matter that you did take a democratic input. You are not going to treat it democratically. Each opinion doesn't hold the same weight. I mean, the obvious thing to say would be, Nico basically had the whole org's life hanging by a thread when he almost went to Falcons. Like, it's pretty key to keep that guy happy, let's be real, if you want all the rest of the team. It's even implied, by the way, if you think about how that move went, that like Nico leaving or going might even have something to do with Monacy and where he plays. So like, actually, the implications are huge. But the point is, first of all, already, I don't think it's a good faith argument to be like, they all should have equal input, so you can't blame anyone. They're all like equally 20% to blame. But then the other angle I want to ask you about is this. I also just think it's a weird angle, because I would go the other way, Maniac. True, if Nico was like being an arsehole and being the God Emperor and doing stuff like that's why this recent one would have been shocking if it was true. If he really got JKS kicked, who I thought was doing a great job in the role he was in, and it brought in Nexa, who thus far has struggled, then yeah, that sounds whack, because that sounds like, oh, what an asshole. But here's the thing, if it was just like he has input, like I said, like a star player might, like if some star player in football has played in your team for years, you haven't won like the Champions League, and he's like, look, we need to get like a better winger, otherwise like I don't know if I can stay in the project. That wouldn't be like being abusive, that'd be totally legitimate. Like what he's telling you is, for me to stay here and be my best, I need you to bring these things. So the weird angle I would spin to you is this. Dude, I actually think it's such a weird take, because I would actually literally say, and not in a malicious way, I want Nico to have input. I want him to care about his rosters and his team. Look, don't like think you are the GM, but if you have serious input, if you really do think like we need a certain player, we need to kick him, you should say that. And by the way, you should actually hope you're taken seriously. Like, I would think it'd be a bit whack if in like 10 years Nico retires and he goes, yeah, actually I wish I had sort of put some of my influence around, or I wish I hadn't, like, because the obvious one to me, mate, is, you know, that whole period where this is where Yanko and Nico came up with this narrative in the first place, was that really long period where they'd kicked Carrigan and then they just kept cycling all those boomer IGLs like Adren and Neo, and obviously it wasn't a great look, right? And the rumor at the time time even was. They were trying to get other boomer IGLs like Flusher and Exist. And, like, they would just go, the joke is, like, I really used to say, it's like Nico just looked up all the people who beat him in 2016 and he was just working his way down the list. Because you know some pros are like that. They just idolise the past generation. Like, even Simple did with Fallen guys. Like, that's why he got so mad. I said he was overrated. So the weirdest part to me is, though, like, I actually think it would be a mistake if you're a player as great as that to have, try not to have influence. Like I said, try not to make it perverted influence. But I even feel like it can potentially be a good thing for the team if you do it in the right way. What's your take on this whole topic? I'm wondering where you're at on this.
So I'm relatively close to you on that one. I think what is really complicated is the community perspective and the inability for people to perceive nuance in general.
Oh, sure.
And I think that's why that makes the whole dialogue pretty complicated, because on an ideal level, you want your superstar and arguably a player that you know has a special connection to the game. You want his input as much as possible. Like, I don't buy the whole 20% for everybody. I don't think that's how it works in any sports anyway. Then it's up to the org's decision to weigh in, okay, how much this guy's opinion is worth and what are we going to do about it? That's not on the player's side to decide. But to back to your point, I think, yes, it would be healthy and even necessary for Nico to have a say in what is happening in G2. Just by his position, by his disposition for the game and what he can do, and arguably what he knows better than some other players, 99% of other professional players, I think he should be requested to give his opinion. What can happen sometimes, though, is that, as we know, either during shuffle times or roster mania or whatever, you start to have conversations with different potential teams and all, and then at the same time, in parallel, your team, your GM or your coach is trying to figure out what the hell is happening with the team, and then when you come back, change your mind, or for whatever reason, because I don't have access to any unofficial information on that one, but when you come back, then there's already been a thought process, and then you were presented with the thought process, and then maybe it's too late to say, hey, listen, this is not okay, this is what I want. So I don't know in which scenario we are here, but one, no, I don't believe that all players should have an equally important opinion. I don't think that is. I think all players should have the chance to give their opinion and to back it up, but then it's someone else's job and sort of mission to weigh in, okay, this guy wants this, this is what he wants, who do I value more and what do I want for my team? That's the GM's role, that's higher up, that the coach, of course, GM higher up in the organization. These are the people who have to make these choices, but I don't think every player's opinion should matter the same. That's not how I see the game. I've never seen it like that. And then again, I the problem that Nico has right now, and here I'm just doing hypothesis, I don't know how he feels about it, but how I can imagine the problem he would have is that it's very complicated to go out to the community and make that kind of statement without people saying, ah, so you decide everything, so it's your fault. You know, you sometimes have to choose one, the lesser evil out of the two. So you just say, yeah, listen, I had nothing to do with this, because you don't feel like people will give you the leeway to understand, okay, listen, yes, my opinion matters, maybe more than others, but that's not that easy. There are other implications that come in here. That's where the problem is usually. And I think some players faced with that, they just withdraw. It's like, I don't want to touch this. That's too complicated. So maybe that's what's happening here.
I'd also give like an analogy to people, which goes like this. In the same way as when, let me think how to phrase this. So like one of the problems Nico has here, in my opinion, is this will sound like a weird analogy, but I think you'll get it. Because I'm actually going to use players like Nico and Simple at the rest, right? You know, obviously, famously, an example is Simple, right? When Simple was younger, not only was he like, I know that dreaded term toxic. I actually prefer the term corrosive maniac because it doesn't carry the same association, but it's actually even better descriptive. Like the real problem is just more the idea that if you put this certain person into the group, it just corrodes the relationships, the bonds, and ruins the morale. I think that's actually a better term than toxic, because the problem with toxic is it almost implies like, oh my God, it's just pure cancer. It's like, no, that goes too far, I think, and people have this weird association. But the notion that there's players who are like assholes, but I don't think that was even the biggest deal. If people don't know, the problem, if you ever saw that open letter I did to Simple, I sort of tried to explain this to him, is that Simple didn't get a concept that a lot of people who are very high skilled but a bit bad at the relationships don't get, which is, yeah, in theory, you are sort of owed the resources to carry if you're like really that much better than everyone and you would win the game. Like essentially, in a way, that could even be you being a good teammate. You're just trying to lead by example and do the most in the game. That's your style of leadership, right? Maybe that's even your way of making up for like personality issues. But the problem is, if you are also an arsehole to other people and you don't engender a positive feeling in them and you don't make them want to play for you, which is what you're asking for when you ask for the resources, they, even though it's true, they might sort of be cutting off their nose to spite their face by not giving you them and then not winning the game. You can also understand, though, because you're being a bit of an arsehole, why they wouldn't want to do it, right? An essential part, actually, to be that guy is to sort of temper it. So you want to have like a bit of this arrogance to believe, hey, I should be the one who carries. Give me the resource. I actually am the best player in this server. You know what? Even if that's zero and equal, I'm simple. Give me the resource and we'll win, I'll tell you. But you've got to make that guy believe like he's not worthless for doing. You're not taking the resources because he's a bomb. You're actually saying to him, like, I need them basically because in this moment it's better for both of us. So I would just say this. The one of the problems I think players like that have is we spend so much time telling players like that, like, be a team player, don't be the ego one, like, you know, take yourself out the equation, play for the team, that I always think the problem you have is like that famous thing that recently happened this last year with Ziwu, where people actually think this is like nitpicking. They don't get that, like, it is a really strange phenomenon that Ziwu has this like unselfish nature to his character. And the joke is literally people like Zonic and Ekstaz are telling him, be selfish, fucking do it, please. And Apex like, fuck, we're going to lose this match if you don't start doing it right. Obviously it's weird when you have to go the other way, right? So I feel like Nico's gotten caught in the same problem Ziwu has, right? Which goes like this. Normally people are so used to the idea that a big name superstar would be egotistical like this, like, put it into a spoiler, guys, I'm almost certain Simple has made demands within Na'Vi. Come on, I'm almost certain about it. Certain people get to join or didn't get to join or got to stay a bit longer if they weren't that good. I think he definitely got to have influence. I think they really cared about what he thought, whether he consciously did it or not. I know that's the impact from the stories I've heard, right? So the problem I feel like here is Nico thinks he's being the good guy by not doing that, right? He's like, hey, I'm not going to be the superstar diva. But the issue goes like this, Maniac. Notice in that analogy I gave, I didn't say every star player should say, hey, give me all the resources and make me the supercar. It's actually only a few people that would be appropriate for. So I think the mistake I think Nico makes is this. If he actually had a genius GM or coach, like, look, I don't claim to know the Pekka guy. Obviously, Taz has only just started in the game. They could be good at their jobs. I'll just say this. Since Taz has only just started, I think it's unreasonable to think he's Zonic already. I think that would just be, I think you're being a bit of a homer for the fact he was a brilliant player and a great personality. It's another skill set. You've got to learn it and experience is part of it, right? But and in my opinion, that's not the same as if his coach was Zonic and then his general manager was, I don't know, we'll make one up, we'll say Zeus or something like that. Or the joke is you could make it the other round. Maybe Zonic's the general manager and Zeus is the coach. Whatever way around, pick one that you think makes sense. Pick someone you think was a great GM. Essentially, I actually think then it would be appropriate to say, hey, you know what? I'm just Nico the player. I just shoot the AK, mate. You're brilliant at what you do. Actually, the best way for us to win is you take all that power. You decide the players, the coach. I'll just play. That would be... if he did that, by the way, I'd go, fucking hell, props. Like, you've actually sort of like figured out the system. My issue is just like, essentially, as you've sort of seen there, I think sometimes in his career, my problem was the notion that he was going, hey, I don't want like the responsibility, basically. And it's like, yeah, but then what's the rest of the sentence, Nico? Who gets the responsibility? Because if the responsibility, like that phase story I told you, was they claim, by the way, that none of those players had any input, and that all that happened was they would ask for players and then they claim it's that phase takes a long time to do business deals or something, and that's why they ended up with sort of stand-ins like Adren and Neo and players where it's not like they actually, that wasn't the top of their list to ask for, but it's more like it's just who they could get in that moment. And you know the story goes, they were trying to get like Tabson and Sharks and fucking, there was a whole bunch of Alex famously from Vitality. They wanted like bigger names, and essentially the joke is it was almost like one of those like asking mom for McDonald's, and then she's like, we got McDonald's at home, and then it's got that shitty burger she made for you. It's almost like that meme, isn't it, right? So like that part I get, but do you see the distinction I'm trying to make? Like, it's one thing to say essentially you're better than me at this, so you take the responsibility. But I think sometimes, I mean, obviously it is my take, I think sometimes if you know someone else isn't capable, I have a saying, and okay, I'll put it this way, I've been in companies, Flashpoint, editor-in-chief of websites, I always had a rule that went like this, Maniac, I'll give you a try to do something when we haven't tried it yet. But if I see a bunch of times, you just can't do it, like I assess you're actually not capable of delivering like on the level we need, eventually it's my fault if I keep assigning you that responsibility. Like actually, if I'm your boss or I'm in charge of this project, eventually I have to basically go, like, this doesn't make sense for you to do. So in this scenario, sometimes I think it would essentially be, that's what I mean, essentially. I actually like the overall vibe from Nico and Janko in this case. I agree with them. I do think in a professional sports structure, if you have competent people in the structure, you should let them do their job. You should probably just play it. You should just shut up and dribble, essentially. But I also do think esports isn't necessarily always at that position. And I think sometimes when their careers are as short as Nico or Simple, I think some of those guys, mate, Nico and Simple particularly, they're in the last chapter of being the superstar god carry that can do everything. So I actually hope they do everything to maximize it, because I don't want them to just waste a year or two on rosters they don't like, you know.
I appreciate that you put Simple and Nico in the same category, knowing one of them is already inactive right now. So we'll get.
Yeah, but he's coming back though. here's the thing, Maniac. That's an angle we can spin yeah, into that angle now, because there's something else. Even before, funnily enough, I actually didn't know he was in Katowice. Even before that interview at the end, where he just did announce after the major, he's coming back. If people don't know, Simple says he's coming back. Now, here's, because he's hilarious and simple, he didn't even think he needed to let us know, will it be in Na'Vi? But I'm going to assume, listen, this is where it's bad news if you're actually anyone not called Simple, because I actually think Wonderful's playing great. By the way, I think he could play great. He could even be the MVP of every event from now on. The problem is, unless he literally wins the major with like a 1.8 rating, he's going to be replaced by Simple if Simple decides, I'm coming back. You know what I mean?
Duncan, you're missing the real idea. The real idea is to have Simple come back as a hybrid and not as a main offer.
I know he hinted that, which, by the way, here's the thing. That also wouldn't actually be that terrible if you consider how powerful rifles are now. I think there's a world where this will tie into what I was going to say, actually, which is I already hoped that Simple seeing Zee win player of the year would already make him like, wait a minute, how long am I really taking off here? I've got to get back in the game, you know. Like, this guy's taking like the records. But I also hope that him seeing Donk just made him think like, I've got to get back in this game, mate. Like, because the other thing you have to realize, and this is a key point I want to make, is I also do think there's like two parts to being an all-time great player. This will sound a bit weird, which goes like this. There's the part that you do where you're at your peak and you can just win as many championships as you can. But I also think it's actually quite key at the end to not retire when you're on top. The reason why you don't retire when you're on top is because ideally the dream is you still get a couple of years on the calm down, where what you do is you use like your experience and the fact that you're like battle-tested on stage to just deny a bunch of the up-and-comers who one day will be your rival in history. You've got to deny them a few crowns, you know what I mean? You've got to, like, for example, he's already done this as he was. You've got to come back and sort of take one of his when he would, you know, he was number two. We all would have given him what you got to do that, but you got to play defense as well. You know what I mean? Like, that's why I want to see Simple back.
And the problem that I have about in this conversation, because it's a thought process that I already had. The problem that I have is I don't know if Simple is ready to come back and not be one of the five best players in the world, because you know that's a question. I'm never going to stand here and doubt what he can do. I think he's given us way enough evidence to prove that whenever he's really applying himself, he's at the very, very top. But first of all, let's not pretend like he was one of the best players in the world when he stopped the game.
Well, he wasn't.
Not at all. He was not in that conversation anymore when he stopped. And now he stopped for a very long time. And not only is obviously his life continuing on these tracks, but now Donk is coming around the corner and is fucking destroying everybody and putting every kind of record you can have on one event and put it all in one big packet, put a bow on it. So if you are Simple right now, do you have it in you to swallow the humble pill and come back and try and work your way back to being the best again? That is the question that I have for him. And how would he handle not being at the very top and just grinding through it? You know, like grinding, having a project. Because that's the statement that I made. When Na'Vi went international, obviously I thought it was an incredible gambit to be put together. But anyway, I said, we have to realize that this could actually mean the end of Simple. Not because he wouldn't, as an individual, be one of the best in the world, but because we've already established that in order to win trophies, the one-man game doesn't exist anymore. And I'm just going to put Donk between fucking accolades right now, because we're going to touch on it at some point. But in order to win actual big trophies, you can look at any of the team that have won in the last 5 to 6 years. You're not doing a one-man show anymore. That doesn't exist. So you can make the argument that in Na'Vi he wasn't set up to have success. That would have taken a time for this lineup to maybe never win a trophy at all. That's very possible. But so what, he comes back in Na'Vi, he doesn't have a trophy winning team at all. That hasn't changed. Just Simple coming back now to Na'Vi doesn't make Na'Vi a trophy winning team. So where are we actually? We're back at the same point as we were prior to him taking his break, in a new game with better players. The only thing that might have changed and that would play in his favor would be that he is mentally recharged, he's refreshed, his resilience is at the very top, he knows what he wants, and he's ready for all the challenge. That would be the biggest difference maker, because at the end of his stint in CS2, at the beginning of CS2, he definitely didn't have it in him anymore. He just said, you know what, I need time for myself, I don't want to play this game. And I respect that. I respect that he didn't lose anybody's time, he didn't lose anybody's money, but just being there, not doing anything. You might as well just say that. But it's not like the situation has changed drastically. If anything, the only item in this equation that could have changed is himself. And if he himself has a different sort of take and perspective on the game, and if he's ready to have this grinding mindset, then yeah, of course, let's open the conversation. But I'm not going to stand here and pretend like he's going to come back and immediately be in grand finals because he's got a trophy winning team by his side. That's just not the case.
I mean, it's certainly one thing I think people don't factor in. Like, the reason why actually the way he took that break was almost clever from a PR angle is, like, spoiler, guys, he wasn't going to turn it around in CS2 and win player of the year anyway. But actually, by going like, well, I sort of chose to leave the game, it makes it not seem like quite as bad, right? Because everyone even said at the end of the year, like, we just didn't play the game anymore. But I agree with you. If you actually look, even though his last tournament was obviously that Pro League run at the end of CSGO where they made the finals, guys, if you watch that, like, maybe that tournament he was pretty good, but he'd had a pretty rough summer. Like, a lot of people have forgotten because of CS2 that, like, Simple and FaZe were the big names that were falling off in the world at the time. Like, they were kind of shocking, both, like, relative, obviously, to what the individual and the team levels. Like, it was kind of shocking. These were the people we just assumed would always be good and had the crazy floor. But I'm with you, actually. No one knows where he'll be at as a player. And then also, there's that whole thing, like you say, because I'll tell you what, even though it's not as bad as at the beginning of CS2, the whole AWP thing still hasn't really been figured out. Like, I actually don't know right now, especially after seeing how Donk plays, if it would even be the right move to just go back and be the primary AWPer. Like, maybe actually Simple could make it work with the rifle, mate, because it depends what his role in the team's going to be, you know.
Well, that's obviously easy for me to say what he should do, and I'm just talking out of my ass right there. But I do think that, consider if he wanted to come back to Na'Vi, I think it might be a better move to be hybrid and leave Wonderful in that position, which I think is doing a pretty decent job.
Yeah, exactly.
Actually, low-key think he's being a little bit underrated.
He
also
is.
Because they don't have deep runs, so why would we ever? But when you actually look at him play, he's really got something.
Yep.
Not anywhere near top level Simple with the AWP, right? But that's besides the point. I still think it would be a win for Simple to have a bit more movement in his game, to run around with the rifle, to be as aggressive as the way he likes to. If you remember, the way Simple used to play when he was on one was super aggressive. Not stupid aggressive, but super aggressive. Like, holy hell. Always an ability to know, where is my next frag? I'm going to get this guy, and then this is my pathway to the next guy, and I'm going to go straight there. This is what Donk's doing with the rifle. That's exactly what Donk's doing with the rifle. Like, a super high propensity for duels, to go in and make the difference. Just do that with the rifle. Be able, pick up the AWP whenever you want, here and there, when you feel like it. But don't be shackled by a gun that maybe you don't really dominate or master anymore right now, and then have your confidence completely shut down. As far as I'm concerned, right now, there's only really Monacy that has completely figured out the AWP.
Yes.
I would put Zywu a step below Monacy, purely in terms of, like, expert rifle. I still think Zywu is a better player than Monacy. But in purely expert role, I think Monacy is above. He's the only one that seemingly hasn't been harmed by the change of pattern for the gun, the change of behavior for the gun. And he was able to translate that to his play style, which is lightning fast, very movement-based as well, very combat style. Like, Monacy has that. The rest is kind of playing catch-up. Brokey's playing catch-up. Sampaius had a very rough time. Jame, it's a little different because I feel like because
of the
way he plays.
The only two that I would have even said as a counter would probably be Shiro and Jame. And they're the most passive AWPers of all time. Yeah, exactly. So we're talking about, like, the AWP that you mean when, like, the whole point is, the reason we all said Simple and Zywu have to be the AWPers is because they could actually be aggro and just dominate the game with it. Yeah, I agree. No one does that. Like, I actually think the Sampaius angle, by the way, is probably slept on. A lot of people were blaming him, Katowice, during the event. It's like, mate, not a lot of people, like you say, where are all the big AWPers popping off? Like, by the way, he did get it going in that playoff series. Like, he got it rolling eventually. Yeah, I agree with you. The AWP in general has been somewhat, like, nerfed. It's just everyone's kind of been a bit quiet about it. We're just blaming all the players. Probably Monacy's making them all look bad, like you say.
I mean, I don't really know if it's just... I mean, there's probably an argument to be made about Monacy playing the shit out of CS2, like having an incredible amount of hours and just grinding the game days in, day out. And you got to respect that as well. And then it just matched perfectly with his play style. But yeah, I'll give that to him. But for Simple to circle back to our conversation, I think it would ease in his returning to the game if he actually would do it as a hybrid with a very potent sniper whenever he decides to. You give him some breathing room as well. You don't shackle him. That's what I would do in my very humble opinion, because I also believe that if you look at this Na'Vi roster and if the premise of the conversation is that he's going to come back to Na'Vi, I think removing Wonderful would be a mistake.
If I go one step further, the obvious player would probably be Ima, right? Probably remove him and put Simple and put him on a rifle.
Probably.
By the way, I actually think, if you want to make the point you said before, the issue you have if you replace Wonderful is Wonderful's doing a very good job and he's actually doing the role right. So you're right, if you replace him for Simple, even if Simple's really good, you haven't fixed anything else in the team. The obvious reason why if you could take him out is actually everyone else in the team sort of got it together in their role. So suddenly, the joke is, actually, if Simple's on a rifle and Wonderful still ops, maybe you do have a championship winning team then.
Well, and maybe you would give Bit his mojo back, right? I don't know. True. Maybe having Shin Bull next to him, that would mean something. Because I think JL, if you consider the role that he's got, I think
he seems like he does a good job, mate. Yeah,
he's doing.
What people don't know is this. You know this, Maniac. I don't. People can say anything they want to me on Twitter. If they actually do a good job in the server, mate, I'm not going to just go, they're bad in the game. Like, what people don't get is this. It's actually even something I build into how I insult you. Because my whole take, it's like I used to tell Nico back in the day when he would actually come literally in bars and after parties and try and tell me, I don't know what I'm talking about. I would tell him, mate, no, it's the other way around. You're just a guy who is paid because you're really good at wiggling your wrist. So shut the fuck up, have a drink and wiggle your wrist. And I'll stick to the thinking and talking, mate. Like, I don't worry about that. Listen, you might be great in the game. The whole point is I'll just roast you for the out of the game shit. But no, I agree with you. I actually think in that team, by the way, I'm even with you. I actually think the whole team's got the wonderful factor. The real issue is because they're Na'Vi and they don't win and don't go to the final and they don't have Simple, that makes people write them off and go, who cares? But if you actually look, I actually think everyone except Imma actually is doing a good job in their role. I think Alexi B's doing a pretty good job. I think, actually, I agree, the JL actually frags quite a lot, especially considering he's not in like the greatest fucking roles. And then I do think Wonderful's killed the game, actually. Bits a bit more up and down, but even he's had some good tournaments, you know. It seems like he's gotten used to CS2 a little bit. The only one I feel is Imma is the problem child, unfortunately. It's why, if you notice, here's what worries me. Haven't you noticed, guys, that every time he has a good half or a round, we all go crazy? That's a bad sign. If you're actually really that good, we wouldn't be doing that. Like, it's like we all want to believe is the thing. I wanted to believe after that game of Legion run. The problem is not everyone makes the jump, as it were. You know that. Like, not everyone can make the jump up to the bigger team. Maybe too much pressure, maybe it's the wrong team. Who knows what it is, right?
It's tough to say. At this point, it's assumption. But from talking with the guy here and there, having a few interviews and listening to what he was saying, I do think there's probably an element of like pressure and psychology where the jump was probably a little bit too hard to make. And then it can be like a vicious cycle where you are very aware of how you're not delivering when you should be delivering, which makes you deliver less, which makes you overthink it. You know, you can be trapped in that sort of...
This might sound weird, Maniac, but when I had this guy on a show and I talked to him a little bit before the show, I know this will sound like a strange thing to say, but you know as a competitor what I mean. It actually scared me a bit, mate, that he sounded too humble. That's actually... Because unfortunately, that makes me worried in this scenario that the pressure's getting to you or you don't want too much responsibility. Because I was hoping what would actually happen was, because I saw how he played at the major, I wanted him to sort of be almost like a hot shot and come in like, hey, I'm the shit, like, you know, I am the next best player, like, put me on it, give me a team like Na'Vi and fucking dominate. Unfortunately, I get worried that actually I've felt like the whole time in Na'Vi maybe he's the person that it's gotten to the most, you know, because I do think, I mean, obviously he had crazy expectations, because even though it's just one run, dude, he almost was the MVP of that major. So, like, brains, that's what we expect. That the joke is we almost want him to be like Romanian Donk or whatever. Like, it's kind of wild actually how we're treating this guy.
Yeah, it's fair. I also think that out of all the players in Na'Vi, when the roster was put together and Simple was still on it, he probably was one of the most affected by Simple's moods, like mood swings up and down, and the climate. You know, I like the use of corrosive as a term that you were saying, and how it can sort of transpire and then leak into other people. And not everybody is equipped to deal with that. Like, some people don't get affected by it. Some people keep on doing their shit, and that doesn't matter. I always picture in my mind, like, the reason why Electronic and Simple was such a good duo is that Simple could do whatever the fuck. Electronic would just be stone cold and play his game, like, as if nothing was happening to his left. Doesn't matter. It felt to me, and that's, again, assumptions, but just from looking at them playing, that I think Ime might have been affected by quite a lot, by the climate that was created. And then this could have been the first sort of tripping down the stairs. And then after that, he has a few games here and there, and we all jump on it. Like you said, like, we're so hungry for good games from Ime. Whenever it happens, we just feast on it. Like, oh my God, yes, it's happening. But over time, it does feel like the consistency isn't there, or at least not at the level that we were hoping for. That's just, we gotta acknowledge it.
Like the meme reference point, if someone's old school enough in CS, because everyone will know what I mean when I say it, if you were there, is, look, this is an extreme example. Imra isn't on this level, but everyone knows back in the day, if Anders ever tweeted like, Markov's back, that just meant that like Markov had like one half where he opted a few people. You know what I mean? It didn't even mean he was like great. It's just that the point is, obviously, that's the ultimate example of where someone's like an old great player from a past game, and you just want so badly for them to be good now, and you're like, please. But like, it just doesn't happen enough. So as a result, you really do just go crazy when they do anything in the game.
I know.
Counterpoints is brought to you by eSportsBet, the industry's leading crypto odds matrix. And did you know you can actually claim, if you haven't already, five USDT for free to use on the site? Just use the QR here. They have this Telegram group and they put all the latest promotions, giveaways in there. So basically, yeah, just go ahead and do that. You can get the five USDT, join that group. You'll know when all the latest stuff's coming out. Get more from your crypto with eSportsBet.
I also wanted to just open a topic because we were talking about Nico and we were talking about Simple as well. And you were having this sort of conversation around the level of ambitious and ego that can be linked and how it's connected to winning or not. I was reading this book about chemistry and I hate myself for forgetting the author, so I might just hit you up with that later on.
Okay.
But there was a very interesting distinction that was made. And basically this author sort of studied different teams of the baseball professional league in the US, right? And they followed a couple of very interesting characters. And what they realized was that there is a distinction that can be made between like personal chemistry and task chemistry. And so personal chemistry would be just, five persons just getting along. We're good friends. Right, you know, okay. I appreciate you. You're my friend. Whereas task chemistry would be, doesn't matter the differences. I believe in the fact that you want to do everything to win. And you believe in the fact that I want to do everything to win. And in that canvas, that person or that author was talking about how some people who from the outside might have been painted as toxic or corrosive or aggressive, but within the ecosystem of the team was actually doing a really good job for everybody because there was this task chemistry and everybody understood that, oh, yes, this guy is taking more space. This guy is being a bit more aggressive, a bit more ambitious, but that's because he wants us to win. And it's in my interest that he behaves like that. And I think this is where people who have exceptional abilities have to really walk this line. As I think teammates and the whole world quickly realize when these people don't have the win in sight anymore, but have maybe personal goals or are already thinking about jumping ship, that this is where everything goes out of balance. But as long as you really only have a genuine interest for the win for the team, it's a little bit like the Michael Jordan sort of philosophy, right? It's all about the win. And it can be rough at times. And I think it's a very thin line to walk for like superstar players to be able to cultivate this task chemistry and still being who they are, like being a bit arrogant, being a bit ambitious, being a bit self-centered. Like a healthy level of that is almost demanded in these roles. But you have to be able to make sure that everybody knows the win is what comes first. And I think that softened up a lot of the issues. And that's a distinction that I think is interesting to make when we talk about teams.
I mean, I can actually give you a good example, which is I haven't actually read it yet, but I'm almost certainly going to read this Elon Musk biography that was written by this guy, Isaac Jacobson, because the reason I'm going to read it, actually, it's not particularly that I'm like super obsessed with Elon Musk, but the reason I'm going to read it is because this same guy, Isaac Jacobson, did a biography of Steve Jobs before he died. That was amazing because basically, apparently he did the same thing with Elon Musk because this guy himself has like made a name as like a really good biographer. Apparently he's able to actually have the social cachet to say to these people, like, if you want me to do your biography, you have to literally give me full access and you don't get to see it at the end. I just write it however I saw it and then I publish it. And believe it or not, I mean, I'd imagine even, by the way, the Elon Musk one's probably as a result of getting the Steve Jobs one, then the joke is Elon Musk probably read that and was like, wow, do this about me. Because as a result, the reason why it works is basically the guy really does just try to be like a fly on the wall, as we say in English, or be an observer. Like when he goes, he will interview like everyone in your life, like he'll interview your former wife or your kid or something. And so they might tell him some fucked up stuff, but here's the cool thing about him. He always draws it into the bigger holistic picture of who you are. So what he'll try and present essentially is like, you want to see, you've seen like the success of these people. These are some of the most successful people ever in business and finance and all that stuff. But what he's trying to show you is like, I would describe it this way. What type of human do you have to be, especially to those around you, to be that person in this particular area? Because as you might know, just like a Michael Jordan in sports, sometimes to get the success or sometimes the excellence that they want, they actually essentially say, I'm willing to sacrifice personal relationships, or I'm willing to actually like maybe even have like less happiness in the team, or I might even have to go hard on. There might be one guy I sort of ride a little bit. I notice he only performs if I'm on his case a little bit, or I pressure him a little bit. And here's the problem. This is where I feel like when we're fans and we're thinking as ourselves, as a person, we're not in the game right now. We're just having a conversation as humans. On a human level, that sounds horrifying to realize, oh, no, wait, what do you mean? You should respect his input. And, you know, he's an equal valued member of this. All the things we all say, because they're all lofty, beautiful ideas, right? The problem is, in practice, the question becomes, one, does that actually work? Is that approach, being nice and democratic, efficacious to winning in a team game? I would, or business or a company, I would say, unfortunately, if you look at the world, I would say it seems like you can sometimes get lucky and you can do it, but I would say in a lot of cases, a lot of arseholes seem to succeed. But it's quite obvious, Maniac, because if I'm putting a lot of my attention, care, and resources into our personal relationship, and someone else has a similar scenario where they just put it all into something that makes us succeed, maybe they will be more successful. But you've nailed it there. The key issue is going to be, in that analogy I just gave there, if I don't give you equal resources and equal say, but then that pisses you off and you go, well, I'm not even going to help you then. Well, then I actually will be less successful than even the guy who had the equal relationship. So the key thing I noticed from reading the biography about Steve Jobs, and I've heard apparently it's the same thing with Elon Musk, is there's this one refrain keeps coming back from people who've been in their lives. They will say, oh, absolutely, this person sometimes destroyed my mental health or pushed me to the absolute limits. Some of them even say, like the ones who worked on these, like, you know, crunch projects where you got some crazy, like 2 weeks to do, like 3 months of work. Some of them even say, I had to quit after that, or I had to like go on, like, you know, go to like therapy or something, or I was totally burned out. I actually felt that my loss. But here's what's mad, Maniac. Some of those people don't quit, and some of them even come back after the burnout. And what they'll tell you is this: even though it's crazy and part of me hates this guy, the mission that we were on though felt so important. And when I saw the work we did and I saw the success we accomplished, part of me thought, even though I don't like it, what he did worked though. Like, he did get us to the goal. He got us to the promised land. He accomplished this thing. We launched the product. We got out on time. We did. And the kiss of Steve Jobs, supposedly, one of the ways he would like destroy people's health basically was he sort of made outrageous demands. Like, he was sort of telling you, like, we have to invent this new thing no one's invented, and we're just going to invent it in a month instead of 12 months that you guys say it might be. And the point of that is all the engineers would be like, it's impossible. But even some of them would tell you, but then believe it or not, we got it done. But that's just because this guy like just was such a crazy driver of this project, but at the expense of everything else. And so what I would say is, to me, if you get it wrong in the book, I think what you'll take as the premise is like, be an arsehole and just only care about yourself. It's like, no. Notice the key dynamic, like we're talking about here, Maniac. I think I've made a good point towards the bigger topic here, is you have to get them to buy in. Like, as you say, it's one thing if they think you're being an arsehole, but if they think like essentially you're being a bit of an arsehole, but you also are the better person to have this resource or to do the job or for them to help, that'll be the key thing. So I'll give like an example I hope normal people who've had a job could relate to. Like I said before about the tone someone does in it. If your boss comes to you and you like working this job, you want to keep this job. If your boss basically says, I need this thing done by Friday, but he does it in a really rude way where you don't feel valued and you feel like actually he's going to take all the credit and you're just basically he's just being an arsehole. It's ruining you. You might then think, oh, well, fuck him then, I won't do it. But on some level, you want the business to succeed. You want your job to succeed. So if he'd have phrased it in a different way, where he'd have made it sort of like, hey, like if you can do this, we can succeed in this way, even though it might mean you take a lot of shit that you don't want to do, that might be different. Because then that's like a positive thing to appeal to. Because I do think, by the way, as a general rule in life, I'm not as big a fan of the notion of running away from negative things and that like scaring you into doing something. I'm a believer in attraction. I'm a believer in the idea that when you really want something and it's powerful, it draws you to it. And so in this particular scenario, like this is why actually I alluded to before, if I was these players, I also would like in a very shrewd way work on personal relationships. So what I'd essentially be doing if I'm Nico is my whole game, if I'm Nico, is I want to convince Nexa, dude, you should want to give me the resources. I'll win you the fucking major. You can, you know what? Fuck this. These guys say your shit as a player. I'll tell you what, if you have a fucking major with you, mate, that will talk different games, so do this, this, and this, that maybe JKS didn't do. I'm obviously giving it pure speculation here. And if you do that, then fuck, it works. Like, if you do that, I think that's the dynamic, you know?
Yes, and it also requires a fair amount of emotional intelligence to do that. Because again, the end of the road is success, right? It's winning with your team. It's being good with your team. It's at the very end. So you cannot just be an asshole because you want to get out of people.
Sure.
Because if you fail to see that with some other people, it's not going to work. They're going to withdraw. They're going to stop trying. They're going to fall into a pit of despair. Then you are being antagonistic to your goal. Like, it's not working out. So if you are a superstar, you, your part of the job is also to realize, okay, I can push this guy to this play, but this is how I have to play with this guy. There's a little bit of human management side to it. Yes. How do I get the best out of the people with me? And if that means a little bit of ego and a little bit of arrogance, that's fine. But if you just bulldoze everybody and you're completely insensitive to whatever they need in their environment to perform, then you're not going to perform. And this is why I love this differential between just personal chemistry and task chemistry. Yes. Task chemistry is what's first and foremost is to win. And maybe player A needs me to be a little bit more direct, a bit more aggressive with him. Maybe player B needs me to be a bit more refined in my approach, be more democratic. Like, hey, yes, this is okay. This is how we're going to do this. That's how I get the best out of this guy. You need to be able to realize that. And I don't think there's a whole lot of people who can do that. But yeah, that's an interesting tangent conversation to have, like superstar and their impact on teams.
I'll give you an example, because obviously I'd like to give people like examples where I think it did work to have what you're talking about, the difference between personal and task. The obvious example would be the teams like the classic French teams with like shocks and existence, for example. Essentially, if you don't get it, guys, the reason that's one of the best examples I've ever seen of creative tension working though. As in, what essentially happened was shocks understood existence is like the great IGL and I need him to provide the structure for the rest of the team so then I can do my shit. But then existence was like, yes, but my system is to be control everyone, but fuck, you're right, I also need a superstar to win me these games against NIP. And it's like, basically by coming to that compromise, they both just activated the task was accomplished. They became number one in the world. Like, it's a great, and it doesn't matter that they might have not personally seen eye to eye, or maybe the whole time shocks was thinking, well, if you did it more like this, it'd be like this. So maybe existence was thinking, if you did it more like my way, it doesn't matter. As you say, essentially they could agree on the idea, let's win though, let's fucking beat these guys and win the title, right?
Absolutely. That's a very good example, actually, of this entire task chemistry coming together. And I think more and more teams now, with the gradual implication of sports psychologists and all, I think it's a concept that people are getting more and more familiar with now. And being able to teach the players that, hey, let's create this distinction between I hate this guy, or this is why working with this guy is complicated. Like, when everything is made personal, every lines get blurred, and it's very, very hard to have an open conversation. No, hey, of course you can have a healthy relationship to your teammates, and I hope that's the case. Hell, I created friendships through esports, and I'm a big fan of them, so that's great. But at the end of the day, your job is to do your best as a player and to do your best as a team. What is necessary? How do you get there? And sometimes I think we blur the lines a little bit. And obviously, from a community standpoint, when we look at it top down, then we all want them to be nice and play nice with. That's not that easy. It's way more complicated than that when you're going to try to get the best out of players.
Now, the other European RMR group is upon us. We're going to have a whole bunch of big names attempting to qualify to the major, the first ever major for CS2. And at EsportsBet, of course, they have got all the matches up. And as well as all the matches, you can go and you can check out. They're going to have all the other rounds as well. So by the time you watch this, maybe the first round's done. But if you go onto the site, they'll have the next round in the Swiss, etc. Some teams I'd maybe look out for is, I actually think, bearing in mind, everyone's going to be a bit low on Astralis. I think there's a world where that talent can just blast through this qualifier. Like for this one, if it had been available, I'd have maybe done an under bet. I think it was 21.5. I'd do an under on that one. I think it could smash them. I think actually teams like Ents could be a sleeper. Mouse is obviously going to be quite strong. Guild Eagles usually has been able to qualify. I think this might be the one with a drop off. Game of Legions, actually a cheeky little team, can maybe be like a 2-2 type team to make it in. I don't think people like OG. So yeah, make sure during the RMR you check it out. Look where the good odds are. Look who the fans are favouring too much. Take some nice underdogs. Take some good favourites if they're at 1.4 to 1.5. As always, check out eSports Bet. I will actually make a prediction now, but I don't know if it'll be available by that time you come. As I say, I think what I'll do here is I think I'll just do the under. I'll just say that it's going to be an under. I think obviously either team can win this, but in this particular case, I actually think I'll do 1,000 for this. I'm going to do the under bet, because I think Astralis is just going to smash them with the raw talent they have here, and I think it's going to be a win. All right, what I thought we could do is, obviously at some point we need to talk about team spirit. Not least, because a no-name team, effectively, in terms of elites and favourites. Like, put it this way, I wonder how many people actually were ever bet on this team to win Kenovitz. I bet you got amazing odds. I bet it'll be like 25-1 or 50-1 or something. So, like, if that wins, if a team like that wins a tournament, obviously we have to address it. Like, they are essentially the revelation of Counter-Strike. But here's what I want to do differently, though, Maniac. Everyone on broadcast, on Twitter, on every show I've been watching, has done the donk segment, where they just do like a 20-minute segment where they basically wax lyrical about how brilliant. Now, here's the good news. One, he's so good, guys, that we've all done that already, all of us collectively. effectively, meaning I did it on broadcast quite a lot. Then secondly, luckily he is the guy. Like, he's going to do it at a future tournament. So we're going to have plenty of time to do that. So I thought in our particular case, I think it would be cool if we just talk about Team Spirit as a team, though, mate. That's the angle I wanted to do. Because I feel like the saddest thing about the event, I totally understand why I was part of doing this, is because in terms of like both what you saw on the screen, the scale of winning such a great accomplishment early on, and the stats, it's understandable why Donk was the ultimate distraction. In this scenario, it makes perfect sense. Everyone was like, in this analogy, like, our attention couldn't escape the event horizon of Donk's performance. I mean, the joke is, part of me even did you start thinking like what I've only ever thought about Prime, Simple and Ziwa, which is, why is the cameraman not on this guy at the beginning of every round? Do you know what I mean? Like, I would get pissed, Maniac, when he would do the 3K, but I missed the first two. Cause I'm like, bro, listen, I know it doesn't make sense, but I knew these kills were coming. You know, when you get that feeling, it's like, why would you ever switch? You know, even though you're right, like observer, like in the normal meta, you're right. The CT covering door on Nuke CT side probably is the guy who's going to get the first kill. I don't care. Donk's on the other side of that door, mate. Go to him quickly. He's going to get the kill. So the problem I feel like is this. There wasn't time to talk about everything else. And bro, I'm not joking. Every other member of this team and the team as a whole needs to be talked about, mate. Like, this was not. Here's what's crazy. It was, by definition, statistically the most dominant performance ever, of course. But what's bizarre is, actually, it is the case that most of the other ones you think of, like Prime, Simple, Prime, they usually were when they were the one-man carry. And it was, and actually the joke is, like, Simple sometimes even lost. So did Ziwa when they did those performances. What the crazy thing here is, I've never seen this before. Someone did what looks on paper like a one-man carry if you only look at their stats. But then you look at the rest of the stats. This is why, by the way, you'll notice, Maniac, one angle I never do. I'm very much against this. But I let other people have their own take, is I don't believe that shit of like, well, you can't blame the third player because all the frags were gone because of Shiro and Axat. It's like, do you know maths, guys? Like, five times, like, it used to be 16. Like, there's so many more frags than Yorick's. You're talking like there's 40 frags in a game, guys, and a guy drops 20, so there's nothing left. Like, there's always enough frags. Like, that's just not the case. And I think this team proves that, by the way, because Donk had, like, the most insane stats ever. By the way, Shiro and Zontik's absolutely fine carving out their own, like, fucking mini MVP numbers. So yeah. I think if you look at the rest of the team, look, I want to make it clear at the beginning, we could literally just make this about Donk. He was that good. But I also want to, let's give the props to everyone. Let's give everyone their flowers. So, Maniac, the first thing I want to ask you is this. I know it sounds mad, but I actually feel like Shiro just had the most invisible op. Like, I can't remember what the, I think his rating was at 1.25 or something mental for the event, Maniac. He had the quietest 1.25 op performance I've ever seen. Because, you know, I saw someone on Twitter say that if you're Shiro, you're never going to get to win the MVP because of Donk, right? And so I gave that analogy that I used to say the same thing happened to Fur with Cold Zero. Because of Cold Zero's style, he'd always win. But I said, here's the difference. I used to feel sorry for Fur because he was taking all the chances. In Shiro's case, if you are the passive AWPer and somehow the aggressive rifer outperforms you, I have to just say, I think that's sort of the way it should be, if you know what I mean. Like, if he's doing all the, because give me that take, give me some thoughts on Shiro. He's obviously back, by the way. I've noticed people didn't mention that. Like, dude, he's back. He's fucking sick. He's still really great. He's won a massive tournament. What are your thoughts? Yeah.
So the thought that I have was that for Shiro, his position within Spirit right now is a dream come true for multiple reasons. First of all, I don't think Shiro, just by the pure nature of his playstyle, I don't think he wants to be the guy that is going to go out there and just open up rounds and take incredible risks. Like, this wasn't the vein in which we have discovered him in Counter-Strike. Like, he was immediately with Gambit Youngsters, then into Gambit, then into Cloud9, a very strong finisher, like end round, clutch situations, very strong defensive punish with the AWP whenever he had, you know, people come into his crosshair covering his teammates that were trying to get traded. He would sort of step in and trade. That's exactly what he needs to do right now in Spirit. Like, the equation between what he wants to do and what's needed from him is almost, like, the correlation is almost 1.0. Like, it's beautiful. What he needs to do in Spirit in order to win and what he wants to do in Counter-Strike is almost 1-1. So, as a result, yeah, there's going to be games where he doesn't really see too many people. Like, if the first line of offense is being successful, there's going to be situations where he just won't see a lot of people. And you know how Counter-Strike is being played at the highest level now. If you have a 2-for-1 traded to a bomb site, it's trading to save. We're not six yes. years ago where people were retrying 3v4s all the yes. time and you would get massive kills. If the first line of offense is successful, you won't get to see a whole lot of people. Turns out Donk opens up 50% of the rounds. So
yes.
let's put it this way, in the offense, right? But I think what he did that I appreciated within the run of Spirit is that here and there, very sporadically, there were moments where halves were on a knife's edge. There were a few moments where there's a clutch that needs to be won, If it isn't, it's going to change the course of the game. It's going to reset financially. It's going to change the meta in terms of like what strategies are available or not. And more often than not, he won them. Like whenever he had to, he won them. For example, the second map of the grand final versus Phage is very, it's the perfect example to use here. You can look at the final numbers of the final and it will tell you a very clear story that Donk had an incredible final, 1.93 rating. Just shut up at this point. It's just out of this world. But if you did not talk about Shiro and Mirage, then you miss an important part of the story because there are more than one time where he clutches at the end round. He's got the opening kill on round 24 with the scout. He's got closing kills with the AWP in post-plant situations. Like this is where he needs to be his best Shiro, which is a super safe pair of hands, not panicking and making sure that whatever advantage Spirit is being put in, that's going to turn into a round. That is going to be closed immediately. You give him a 3v2 on bombsite, the opponent is trying to retake it, that's it. He's closing it for you. So as far as I'm concerned, his numbers are reasonable, although I think he qualified for an EVP, so it's already really good. But like his mission is fulfilled. Like that's what in the context of Spirit, he did what was needed of him in order to win.
Yes.
And he's and what's going to be very interesting in the future of Spirit is if, and again I have to use if, here's a conditional, if one day Donk does not provide that kind of incredible performance within the system, which I think we should talk about the system as well. That's going to be probably the next topic. If Donk doesn't provide that, would Shiro be capable of going beyond what he's doing here? Put a bit more skin in the game, get a bit more stuck in some of these situations and make the difference. That would be the next level. But within this ecosystem of Spirit in Katowice, as far as I'm concerned, it's an A-plus performance from Spirit from Shiro. He did what was needed from him.
Because I would say this. Actually, let's talk about the overall approach Spirit had, right? If people don't know, you notice I almost never, ever talk about the player Chopper, right? I know, here's the problem. I get the sense a lot of people love this guy because they're on that thing of like, I like him as a person, or he seems like a cuddly teddy bear, or like the thing with Major where they just know you've been around years and years and you've been struggling, but you haven't had the success and then you get the breakthrough finally. I get that angle. By the way, I am human. I do understand why people cry when they qualify for the Majors. I just think personally, like, I don't really care that some Portuguese team's going to get banged out in the first round of the Swiss Maniac. You know the way I am, mate. I can't make myself care about shit I don't care about. Like, I'm like, listen, if I was at home and I had tissues and chocolates and I was fucking, you know, it's a Sunday night and it's raining, maybe then I'd get all emotional. But when I'm watching the tournament, I'm not like that, mate. You know how I am. I'm like, skip this, get to the next one. Like, I'd obviously rather have fucking even an IP there for the lulz, wouldn't I? Like, I don't give a fuck. Give me the narratives and the stories. But what I will say is this. I do feel like people really misunderstood. Like, dude, I think something's changed about this guy. Because remember, the original Chopper was the guy from Vega Squadron, right? Guys, Vega Squadron, I used to think, the joke is I call Virtus Pro now anti-CS. That was like anti-CS on the opposite end of the spectrum. You know, they used to just literally just rush and just have SMGs and stupid CZs. And essentially, it was like 5 JWs just playing you every round, just like swarming you all the time. And then the joke was, hence why famously FaZe Clan did lose that BO1 at that major. The joke was, it's like, they're not going to win often doing that, but if they hit you that one time and the right players are hitting, like Amir or something, then yeah, they could just knock out in a BO1 seemingly any team, but they were also the ultimate team after that. There wasn't much more than that. So unless they had people just essentially going for like the crazy haymaker to knock you out, that was all they had. They weren't actually a top team. I'd even say the analogy is a bit like Space Soldiers. Space Soldiers were the same thing. They could upset you in a BO1 on Cobblestone, but if you put them in a series, you could bet like any normal team with normal meta CS would win the series, right? My problem is this. If Chopper did that in past teams, because I did think that Spirit that had like Dexter, for example, that made that like semi-run at PGL, they were like a solid team, but they didn't actually look that great tactically to me. And I thought actually some of the players looked a bit lost sometimes. This team looks night and day compared to that, mate. Like, this team actually, I think, I was talking about this before we came on because it's a point I've been making on my other shows, but I think even the way they use Donk, mate, is so shrewd. I've never seen this from a rookie. Like, this is like, the joke is, it's like they really do know. It's like they must have a crystal ball. It's like, it's almost like Maniac. They looked in the crystal ball and they saw Donk lifting up like number one player in 2024. And they were like, oh shit, wait a minute. If he actually ends up being the best, why don't we just from day one build the team to give him all the resources to be that number one? And it's like you're like in some loop of which one was first. Because in this scenario, they actually played at this tournament, guys, as if he already is prime simple, except on a rifle. So I guess prime Nico or something here. Because he didn't just people. Here's the problem. It is true. You can't actually underestimate the totality of, like, when you see those stats, the reason why those stats defy all Counter-Strike history is, one, he is not ever using an AWP. Two, he is an entry player. And three, he actually does just take duels all the time. But even with that context said, if someone was going to do all those things, here's what I would do to make their job amazing. I'd give them loads of flash assists. Even though you like to take duels, I'd even tell you, brother, this is the duel where the AWP's on an off angle around the corner. Let me, Chopper or Magic, we're going to jump around the corner. You trade him. Like, they do that clearly as well. And then also, by the way, if at the end of the round, after all the damage he's done, he's also got Shearer to close the round, like you say. Like, actually, he's got... And by the way, this is... I haven't even mentioned Zontix yet, and Zontix frags like 1.16 rating in the tournament. So you can actually see, like, for a tournament setup, like, what an amazing setup. And by the way, last thing I'll mention is, a lot of people didn't notice this. The reason my Magics ends up looking like a Boomich type character on an SMG half the time is because, as far as I can tell, he's the guy who just takes the economic hit to make sure Donk always has the gun, or Shiro has his AWP or whatever. So again, from 1 to 5, everyone's doing their job in this team. Like, if we're talking about that task thing earlier, everyone in this team, Maniac, knows their task is, if Donk's the best player in the world, we're going to win the tournament, right? It feels like it.
I agree with you. I really think from a structural standpoint, it was close to perfection.
It was amazing, wasn't it? Spirit.
Like, the roles and how the rounds are built and how the strats are executed. I really think they were close to perfection in all of these aspects, which leads me to think that even if Donk was to take like a 10 or 20% downgrade, because at some point he's going to have to come back to Earth anyway, I would still believe that Spirit would be a very strong contender for deep playoffs anyway, because there were so many different elements that came together in Katowice that lead me to think that, wait a minute, there's no reason to think all of them would go away immediately.
Yes.
That's not the case. And so the first thing I would like to mention first is like the quality of the executes and the utilities used. It's not... how can I put it? It's not superficial. It's not just for fun. Like, every util they use is very well thought out and very well timed. You can follow, like, we did that a couple of times in Katowice where we made breakdowns of rounds, and you can see, of course, as you mentioned, Donk is being set up. I mean, there's going to be 2 Molotovs being put for key positions of the first line for the city. It's going to be 3 flashes at the same time he peeks. Of course, all of that is true, and then he's going to do the job. But, like, the timing of the execute, the pathway that he's got as he's opening the site is immaculate. It's right on the money. And so, first of all, A+ for like execution of strategies, because how many times do you see teams have like sort of janky strats and timings of the util is not that great, and so someone ends up peeking when the Molotov is already extinguished? That doesn't really make sense. They executed that very properly. Then I would also like to give a shout out to Chopper for the decisions that he made as a leader, because I feel like he's been able in this Spirit team to, whenever necessary and whenever it was adequate, tap into his inner Vega squadron and just hit you with the simplicity of a contact play or an execute that's at 1.30 seconds or whatever the hell. He would do that because I do believe it's necessary in today's Counter-Strike in order to win. You can look at all of the teams that have lifted trophies recently, G2, Vitality, FaZe, they all do it. Nobody plays 12 rounds of map control. That doesn't exist anymore. You can never win like that. So whenever he needed to, I think he was very good at calling the right strategies. But also, mid-round tempo and late-round decision-making for rotations and all, really on point. Good reads. And then it felt like they didn't have pressure. And I know it's a blanket statement, but what I mean by that, it didn't feel like they were running after the game and trying to, oh no, we made the wrong gamble. Quick, let's
put it this way. I will say, Maniac, one thing you're pointing out here that I also noticed was I actually kept thinking FaZe was going to come back in this final, because sometimes FaZe could get the early kills in a round, or FaZe would even be up a man. But you're right. The re-engage, or the rotation to come back, the amount of time Spirit then won the round after that was insane. I've never seen that.
Yes, definitely. They have a bit of a VP-esque vibe to them, which is, hey, listen, we're not going to win on all scenarios, but these are the scenarios that we're going to win. If they try to hit A-side, if they split A-side, we're going to win. If they go B, we're going to save. And they seem very quiet and very able to do that. So that's just to give some praises to Chopper, and I'm sure the coaching staff has something to do with this and how they build the strategy. I'm probably missing some people to give flowers to on that one, but I wanted to give a props to the game plan in general. And then, of course, like the individuals like surrounding, like Zontix is an incredible anchor. Like, he really is strong, as in odds-defying strong for the character. And then he's never going to get a whole lot of sunlight. When you're playing with Donk and Shiro, your name might just be forgotten in the history books of Counter-Strike. But if you really look at his ability when he's in a dumpster fire of a situation with people all around him, his ability to grab 2 instead of 1, or to grab 3 instead of 2, or to stay alive 3 extra seconds before he dies, that's really elite level. And for a very young character as well, I think he's, what, 19? I'm pretty sure he's not even 20.
He's very young, yes.
He's very young. So for this profile, this character to already be doing such a good job, And what's kind of interesting as well, if you really look into the details of Spirit's playstyle, is that they have an interesting versatility of how they use players. Like Zontix will play some anchor position, like pure anchor position, let's say on Anubis, he'll play on the A side, but then he'll play short on Mirage. So it's like they can permutate a little bit. Like this guy can be a bit more aggressive on the map than Magisk is going to feel here, because Magisk is a very good glue. And I know this doesn't sound very sexy as a term, but I do think it's extremely necessary for any team to win, to have someone that can just hop.
Yes.
Like just pluck any hole. Where do you want me to play? You want me to play on B side Mirage? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
I actually do call that role, like from Daughter and more. I call it the fill. I used to say NBK was the French Saints fill. He would just do whatever you need.
Exactly. And Magix does that. And not only does he do it, but also you were right. He does it with whatever weapon, which means financially speaking, that also balances the resources necessary. He's going to play with a shotgun. He's going to play with an MP9. Doesn't matter. He'll do it anyway. Dualies, you name it. So what that means is that he frees up a whole lot of resources that can be, you guess, either invested in an AWP for Shiro or in a rifle for Donk, because why the hell would you not? This sounds like common sense to serve Artem. So this is why I really... Obviously, as you said, when we were at the desk in Katowice, we could not talk about Donk. Like, we were witnessing history. It was impossible not to address the otherworldly nature of what we were looking at. But at the same time, I really tried to talk about how there is a balance between individual brilliance, but just an overall system that seems to be working for Spirit. And that gives me hope that it's going to happen again. And thinking about this going to show up at the RMR in 24 hours now, we'll see.
Yeah, actually, on the Zontix angle, I have a bit to talk about there. I actually feel like the joke is, right, it's bad enough if you're Shiro, and like I say, you actually did have the stats that would be the MVP of a normal tournament, but you weren't even in the conversation because of Donk. And then, if you think that's bad, though, like, if he only got a drip of attention, there was nothing. It evaporated by the time we got to Zontix. Like, because I agree with you, mate. First of all, I don't think people realize. I think at the end of the tournament, Zontix had a 1.16 rating at also his first Katowice, guys. Like, I looked this up because he's not only young, he's also mega inexperienced, mate. I looked this up on, if you go on to like Liquipedia, he's played 5 lands ever on there. And one of those was Blast Groups, by the way. One was Black Boom Dhaka, which was that recent one. And one was that like Dunav party that was just CIS teams. That's it. And then the one, like, was in 2021, which was a Ukrainian championship. So, like, basically, he's played Blast, and then now this kind of eats it. Just the groups of Blast, and that's it, of Tier 1 CS. Like, BetBoom had the teams, but obviously no one ticks the tournament that CVC, and also it was just kind of weird tournament in terms of results. So, this guy's mega inexperienced. But I'll tell you what, Maniac, here's the crazy thing. Normally, if I just looked at the stats page, this is the most obvious player to go, well, there's no way that number could maintain. Because, like, yeah, probably the rating number's too high. But as you say, if you just look at what he does in the game, mate, I actually think this looks reliable. This player actually looks like his floor is very impressive. Like, I was even getting a vibe immediately of like, this is almost like a Ukrainian Crims or something. Because dude, the two things he is unbelievable at, like you say, is one, if you just make him like an anchor, or basically if he's alive at the end of a round, it is ridiculous how many times this guy would fight two people and get the second kill. Like, I would see him get the first one, and like a normal player, you go, right, we'd probably get straight. No, he'd just then get two. And you'd be like, he's getting too much. And then also, on the other side, if he's on T side, does this guy ever miss a trade? Like, if you go in and you get, if someone gets, he gets the trade every time, it feels like. That's why I say it reminds me of like a Crimson SVG. You're doing all the like shitty heavy lifting. You're not a total support player, but you're doing like pretty hard work. And so in that scenario, it's a bit like I always say about Magisk. The number doesn't really relate to how good you are, because it's relative to your role. Like, this guy looked fucking amazing in this role, mate. So again, if I think about this, right, the Donk guy, if you look at his style, obviously I don't know if the numbers can maintain, but his style definitely is replicable. He looks really fucking good. Shiro, by the way, probably one of the most reliable players ever, as long as he doesn't get nerves. And then this guy, mate, if you really have these three players, this isn't a flash in the pan. Like, this team can do this more. Like, I'm not going to, obviously, like you say, especially when someone does the numbers Donk did, you have to like take a little pause and shade in the possibility, you know, they're like the third best team in the world, but pretty soon, they're definitely legit. This squad is fucking legit. Like, I'm with you, mate, the Zontix guy. This is the real revelation. Like, I knew the Donk guy could be good. I had no clue some fucking rando guy I've never heard of who's played, you know, like four lands before that is going to come and do this. Like, this is monster stuff. How often do your third best player do that? Not very often, even in big teams, right?
It's a super underrated topic, of course, like Zontix angle. But what really is for me fascinating from like a human standpoint right now is now that Katowice happened, and they had...
Oh, and by the way, that line he also said, I would normally make fun of that. You know where you go, I don't care if anyone cares who I am, if I win 10 championships. Ah, yeah. Well, then you immediately won a championship. You know what? Fair play. I would have normally said, because normally I would say, yeah, but what are they if you don't win then? What if you come second? Like, but since you did win, You win that one, mate. I can't lie. Well done. Great line.
He had a few good lines for the interview.
Yes. Okay, what were you going to say?
No, I was just going to say, like, what is really fascinating right now is now that the storm has passed and they won Katowice and all of this has materialized, can they maintain this candid attitude towards the game? And by they, I mainly mean Donk and Zontix, right? Because Magix and Chopard have been around for a while. Shiro knows all about it, the ups and the downs, mostly the downs at the very highest level. But I'm just wondering, there was such a lightheartedness to Donk playing Counter-Strike, you know, as in he doesn't perceive how important what he is doing is. Like, I am perceiving that. I'm watching him play, and I can already imagine all of the consequences and the ramifications of what he's doing right now. It doesn't feel like he perceives it. He is, to a certain degree, oblivious.
Okay.
He's relatively oblivious to how extraordinary what he did is.
So the analogy is, you think essentially he's like, you know, when Wile E. Coyote chases the roadrunner off a cliff, but it's only when he looks down that he realizes he's off a cliff. So Donk's like, run off the cliff. But the key thing is he hasn't realized it. He's off a cliff. So he's just running still.
He just goes on, right?
Okay.
So I just wonder, is there going to be a moment? Because I absolutely love his attitude. And he was so genuine when he was answering this. And he was just like, oh, you know, I just love to play the game and I have such a good time.
Yes.
And I love my team. And I'm like, bro, like I love all that you're saying right now, but how are you going to deal with this realization that, wait a minute, I might actually be the best player in the world right now. We're the best team in the world right now. We're going to the major. Oh my God, we might win the major. Can you imagine?
Oh, there's pressure to win the major now, mate. Like, for real. Yeah.
Once these thoughts sort of enter your mind, And you become aware of it. Our job on broadcast is to create narratives and drama and implications of what's happening.
Yes.
Oh, what are we witnessing right now? As a player, you would want to shield Donk from that forever and ever.
Sure.
Just like put him in like a sensory deprivation room and just be like, listen, just play Counter-Strike. Like, don't listen to any podcast. Don't do any interview. Don't go on HLTV. Don't worry about it. Just do what you do. But it's not going to happen. To a degree, it's going to find its way to his mind, right? And I'm just unsure how they as a team and he as a player will deal with this realization that, oh, wait a minute, like, maybe we're just gonna win everything. We can win everything. Maybe I'm the best in the world. Maybe I'm the greatest prodigy ever to touch the game, right? So that's what I'm gonna observe in the next few events, is like, is anything changing from this? Because usually there's supposed to be a ramp up for players, right?
Of course.
Think about Simple, think about Zywoo. There was always a ramp up to the point where you win an S tier elite event and you get your MVP and all. But here, there was almost no ramp up. It was just like 0 to 100. Like, that's it. Oh, one kind of I have an MVP and I destroyed the individual's record of rating at an event on day one. It's like, holy hell, how do you deal with that then? That, I'm not sure. That's sort of my question.
Oh, I know what you mean. Like, put it this way. It actually is. I would even characterize it similar to you. It's not even that I want it to be the case. It's that I'm sort of scared it is. Like, essentially, if this is the one guy ever, can he really defy fate forever? Like, everyone has a bad match. Everyone has a bad fight. Everyone has a match when the nerves get to them. Like, the funny thing is, what you're talking about earlier with, like, players like a Simple, et cetera, who obviously the obvious best analogs because they were super prodigies. What actually usually happens is exactly what you're talking about. It's not really, by the way, that, like, the opponent was better. You know what? Some of these guys have had upsets earlier in tournament. Like, remember, Simple was, like, running them to the Cologne final guys with fucking Team Liquid. Like, he's already beaten the best teams in the world. It's not really that SK was unbeatable. I think what happens is this. When you're in the midst of the run, like the Roadrunner phenomenon we're talking about, like, you're just in the middle of it, you're just fragging out, it's working, it's happening, you can't believe it, but you know what, you're in the game, you're immersed. The problem is when you have that time to think about it after the match, and then you are going, like, into a final, for example, and suddenly now you're thinking about things you never were thinking about before, like, hey, maybe we're the favorite here, maybe we can win. Wait a minute, if I play well, I can win the tournament, but what if I don't play? And all those thoughts, those intrusive thoughts come in, right? The problem is, those happen to everyone. So I have to say, the real joke goes like this. Either definitely Donk will have one tournament where he has a big drop-off, probably soon. Or the real joke is, what actually makes him exceptional isn't even the impossible mechanics. It'll be that apparently he's the only player ever to have no nerves in any context. Like, that would even be more transcendent, in my opinion, than the skills, which look bonkers as they are. Because I've never seen that ever, mate. So, like, I've seen the greatest players of all time, Neo, Get Right. All of them have the times when it gets to them, or The joke is sometimes it's not even external fights. Sometimes you can just get in your own head. Like, I can tell you straight up from knowing Simple over the years, some of his absolute worst finals are ones where actually he went in with actually the mindset probably a fan would want him to have of like, I've got a 1v9 this whole thing and be the best player in the world. And I'll tell you what, that's what destroyed him. Because then he did stuff like went for pushes he shouldn't, or like forced on a round where he should normally sit, because essentially he couldn't trust the game. He couldn't trust that his team could do anything. And he himself put the pressure on himself. It wasn't even reading fan comments. It's just thinking myself, like, if I don't win, sort of, it's my fault. Like, that's not the great way to think. Like, Donk so far, somehow, I agree with you. It's not even, you notice again, it's like the Immer thing. It's not that he then comes out and goes, yeah, well, I am the best player ever, actually. And basically, why would I be scared? I was shitting on Rops and Carrigan on practice. No, no. He actually talks like he is just a kid who's just like, I can't believe I actually, I mean, this is great. Like, I'm doing my best. I'm playing well. And what do you know? I've won the tournament. But I agree with you. Part of me is just like, wait a minute. This almost sounds like it hasn't actually hit him yet. Like, he hasn't realised yet that he hasn't just gone to LAN and played well. He's just won, like, a tournament that, like, Carrigan and Nico spent, like, 10 years trying to win. You know what I mean? Like, and in one tournament, we're now saying you might actually end up being the GOAT. Like, that is a lot of pressure. So if it ever pierces that veil, I know what you mean. I'm a little bit concerned. Like, luckily, like Simple at his prime, you do think to yourself, maybe these can just be the aliens that defy, like, all rules.
Maybe.
But I'll just say, human nature and history tells me eventually he's going to have a dip.
Of course,
you know. You're right.
And then this is going to be the moment where we get to discover about what he's made of and what the team is.
Oh, and by the way, don't worry, HLTV.org. They won't just be like, wow, Donk. They will actually, the thread will be like, Donk fans, come here, he is washed. Like, listen, in that win, at least they'll be on brand in that regard, minute, because they'll definitely do that. Like, the haters will just claim like it was a one tournament fluke and he's washed now. You know, God,
bro, it's like it's such a complicated position to be in, because I value time and consistency over time really, really highly when I rate players. That's one of the reasons why I never entered Zywin in the GOAT conversation quite yet, because I really wanted time, you know, years and years to pass. But the problem is the magnitude of Donk's performance in Katowice is so high that I feel like it's not even genuine to play it cool because it's one event. It's disingenuous. Like, you cannot actually just think that, wait a minute, this was just one event. If you actually paid attention to what was happening, you cannot. And some people were really mad at me because I made this tweet where I said three names have changed the game from the moment they started playing.
Oh, right.
Zywin and Donk. Yes. Some people were mad at me and they said, what the fuck? What about Nico? What about Monacy? What about Get Right? What about Device? And I meant it. It was a very first degree tweet, which I felt like these are players where from the first moment I watched them play, you think, holy shit, something's going on.
Yes.
Like, something unreal is going on. Completely out of this world. And, well, maybe for Simple, it was a little bit different because I was playing against him at the time. So I didn't have the distance. I was just getting wrecked. But I had the same feeling with Zywin when he came up in AAA and the first games in Vitality. And I had the same feeling with Donk, which is like, what is going on? What is this guy doing? Well, yeah, I don't know. From this moment on, I guess I just have to be patient. It's like there's a great movie that just came out and I just have to wait for them to produce more movies. And in the meantime, I just have to twiddle my thumb and wait for him to play again Counter-Strike.
Oh, and by the way, I will also say, because I didn't actually touch on the Magic's angle, is the other reason I actually think even he had like a way better tournament than I expected and did things like that, because, like I say, I think he played a very low-resource game, which, by the way, I want to just put this in context. This player, when he first came along years ago, was being billed as a star himself. Like, if you remember, he used to be like an AWP hybrid. He was actually on that old Team Spirit way back in the day with some guy young and all those guys. Actually, that was quite a well-balanced team. There was a bunch of people who were fraggers in that team. And what happened is he's clearly actually done, which I think you get massive props if you do it and you become a champion. He's humbled himself and he's taken a backseat role to facilitate other people to be the star, but it's the right move. Like, the joke is, for someone like him, that's the perfect trade-off. It's like, do you want to be good but on, like, you know, the 18th best team in the world, or do you want to win some championships, mate? If you want to win some championships, this is how, and don't worry, the greatest teams of all time all had someone doing this in that fourth position. It's a bit like in Dota, they're just the support, they understand it, they know that's their role, their job is to help the carry win. Because, mate, not only did he have low resources and give guns and help and all, the amount of, like, The amount of clutches this guy won, even with fucking SMGs and stupid shit like that, like, that's what I call in English, like, found money. That's like Chopper was walking along the street, right? He's already got, like, you know, massive Rolex, like Donk, huge fucking 50K timepiece on. And then around his neck, he's got like a 20K Cuban Lynx fucking gold chain. That's Shiro. Then you know what? He's just got $1,000 just sticking out of his pocket. That's Zontix, just got that there. And then as he's going along, he just goes, oh, I almost tripped over. Oh, what's that? oh, a little bag of 500 euros. Oh, I'll take that for free then. Because, like, that's not even supposed to be there. Like, this guy in the final of Katowice is winning clutches against, by the way, probably the most clutch set of players ever to be in a team. Like, Fierce is unbelievable at that part of the game. The joke is, you saw people like Robson Brokey. They were almost, that's what I think demoralized them. They were almost like, bro, this is when we do with the rounds. So we're supposed to get back in the game on the messy rounds. Like, and these fuckers are just winning all that as well. Like, because that's the thing. Think about if you're on the other side of the server, guys. Donk's putting numbers that are impossible. You can't stop him no matter what. Shiro, you can never get to him because he's a fucking god defensive AWPer. Zontix wins every 1v2 and fucking every time you push him on CT. And then the Magus guy wins a fucking few 1v1s. Like, that's too much. Like, that's, you know, that's like the fucking straw that broke the camel's back. Because I actually do feel like, for real, that part of the reason Carrigan also cried, in my opinion, when they lost that one, is it wasn't just Donk. Like, the joke is, even just Donk, it was possible you could have beaten him that day. But, like, mate, I actually do feel like if I was a FaZe Clan player, except maybe Brokey, who played like shit, the rest of them, it would be like, I actually, it's like that saying we have in basketball where they say if someone makes a shot, well, you can't actually stop the shot most of the time. You have to just go, okay, well done, you were better than me in this scenario. I played good defense, I stopped you going to the basket for easy, but you made the shot. Like, at the end of the day, you deserve to win. That's the game of the sport. In this scenario, if I'm FaZe, the reason why I'd cry if I was Carrigan, it's like, Alfie's so frustrated. Like, what was I supposed to do? Like, in the context of how well they played, we did all right. Like, we just couldn't win this game, it feels like.
I know. So I have, my take is a little bit spicy on that one, but I do think that this final could have taken a completely different turn had FaZe won Mirage.
Oh, by the way, the second map 100% was the one that turns the whole series, right? Because you could see they looked broken after that, mate.
Absolutely. So my prediction, when we started the official broadcast, my prediction was, if Spirit win one of the two first maps, they will win this grand final. That was my prediction. Because the way I saw it was that there was a world in which FaZe arrive, and with their big boots and their experience, they just step on Spirit, and Spirit never see the light of day, and they're just falling under the moment, right? It was possible. Like, yes. I think it was thinkable that FaZe would... The lore about these players on the big stage, they could just stomp them, right? But I thought if Spirit can actually get into the game pretty quickly and not allow FaZe to go 2-0, then they're going to win the game. But the thing is, the way Mirage happened, the way it was a back-and-forth game, and there were force buys being won and clutches on both sides, and you could really see the best out of... I think the level of Mirage is an incredibly high-level map. But because Spirit win this fucking crazy round at the very end, the most FaZe-esque way you can possibly imagine against FaZe, immediately I knew it was over. You've allowed these kids to now move on to map number 3 on the CT side of Overpass with absolutely no pressure at all. They have two maps in the bag. Of course, they're about to white swing on you. You are never going to see a duel prior to the 10 seconds of the round. They will be on you every single time. And that's exactly what happened. But there was a part of me that thinks, what if FaZe had won this very hard-fought Battle of Mirage, and then a group of disheartened Spirit players comes backstage, think about, oh my God, we could have won this clutch. Oh, but okay, guys, it's all right. Let's move on to Overpass. Then you reset the whole story, and then you get to see what they're made of. But because, and I'm not going to take anything away from them, because the way they won Mirage took a lot of heart and a lot of bravery to be able to do it. So they 100% deserve it. But because they secured Mirage, they made sure to be in the best position possible and to completely destroy FaZe. But I do think that it was a real knife's edge on that second map of the grand final.
Oh, I'll just say this maybe is the closing thought then. That is also why I think this was almost like a dream for Team Spirit, because I think in any other day, that is where, like, the veterans of FaZe, who also is a really good team, that is where they clutch it out and win that second map. And as you say, we get what we never really had to have, which is you actually have to, for the first time for real, if you're Spirit, then think, are we actually going to lose this match? Like, maybe we can lose. Maybe they can beat. I'd even say, if you'd have even won that specific match, if you're all the way Mirage played out, because obviously Spirit was always getting leads and they're always winning pistols and they're always ahead in the game, I think actually it does take some of the wind out of you if someone comes back and sort of wins in clutch fashion over you. Whereas, as you say, the joke is actually at the end, it was Spirit who did that to FaZe. They basically did to FaZe what FaZe do to other people, and it had the same effect. Like, the joke is, it even did demoralize FaZe. Like, normally FaZe is the best team at the reset between maps, but I actually think the way Carrigan described it in the post-game interview explains why you know they were broken. Because he said, oh, I was trying to tell myself, since no team in history ever has come back from 0-2, like, we'll be the first once. But it's like, even the way he's saying that is like copium, you know what I mean? Like, it's like he's trying to convince himself of that. He even knows by what he's saying, like, well, obviously we should just lose the game now. Like, it's probably over, unfortunately. So, you know, like, that's one thing. Maybe we'll touch on that as the last thing, because as a player, I think maybe you could speak to this that fans wouldn't know. You know, whenever you have that concept where you say, like, oh, it can go either way. Either it's like you're in a game, and like I say, you say you've lost the first maps and it's going badly. You play the game consciously. You try to win the game still, but part of you knows it's over, or my team's not playing well, or we haven't got it together, and this guy hasn't fixed his game here. You still have to obviously play the game like a professional. You have to sit down and press the button. But part of you knows you're not going to win. In the same ways, I often think the other version of that is when you're an underdog and you think you've won. You're up like in the old system, you're up like 14-3, and then the joke is you think you're going to win all those rounds, and they do the comeback, and suddenly it's 14-12, and you get scared. Right before that, if you said to the fan, well, he thought he'd won, he'd be like, what an idiot, just focus on the game. Like, it's like, no, we mean subconsciously. Like, because I actually, that's the part that maybe to a fan they wouldn't get. They might be like, what do you mean? There's still there were still three maps to play. Like, FaZe should just come back. It's like, yeah, but in your brain, there is sort of like a tipping point, right? Once you reach a certain point of losing and losing in all these different ways, doesn't part of you sort of start to feel like maybe this isn't our day, maybe we're going to lose? I mean, I've heard those stories, dude. I think even fucking Zonic said this. I think he said in that famous Atlanta major final that when they were down 13-7, he said something like, no, it was the other way around, it's Cuban. So when they were up that much, 13-7, he said, I was already preparing my speech when we win, in my mind. Like, obviously he didn't want to do that, but part of the thoughts were just thinking, well, what would I say and who am I going to add? But the joke is obviously he didn't win. So what do you think of this? As a player, I'm sure you've been in that situation. It's a different perspective in the server, right?
Yes, completely. And the way I look at it is sort of like a ripple effect. Like, we're talking about small details, like percentages or whatever, mostly on subconscious level. But the way I look at it is how, as the map progress, your sort of psychological environment is slightly going to influence how you play. And then how you've played will then influence how you feel the next round, will then influence how you feel the next round. That's a little bit how I feel. And the strongest team out there are usually able to catch themselves in that movement and sort of like latch on to what's happening right now, like hic et nunc, and just focus on this without just getting the big picture get to them. And conversely, sometimes the challengers will let the situation get to them as, holy shit, we're about to win, and they start overthinking it. But it's really a matter of detail. Like, I'm not saying that players are consciously already imagining how they will lift the trophy as they are playing the round. It's definitely not what's happening. But it's in the minor details, like the minutiae of, do I peek or do I not peek? Do I play safe? This is the kind of thing that it sounds like blanket statements, but if you were really to analyze in the very detail a game of Counter-Strike, you could almost visualize tension in terms of, hey, did I overpeak this angle? That was a 4v3. Why did I re-peak? Why did I give away this advantage? This is how I see it. I see it as a chain or a wave of mini actions, mini details that then get bigger and bigger like a tsunami, and then eventually it's out of control. And the best of five of an event like Katowice is very specific and very unique, because the cushion that a 2-0 situation gives you is so comfortable psychologically to know that you have two maps in your bag and now you can really go out there and dare and try. The most apt comparison for me, as I've watched a whole lot of tennis, is how a player would be 2-0 in sets in a Grand Slam, and outside from Federer or Djokovic, nobody would come back from that. Like, this is like a 95-5 sort of situation, because they now can play with such... like, they're so liberated and free in the way they play, because they don't have to worry about the what ifs and what if he comes back and I'm going to be in danger. This is what I felt from Spirit. And then for FaZe Clan, if we take the other side of the equation, I don't think they went into Overpass thinking, oh shit, this grand final is over, let's pack up our keyboard and mouse. No, definitely not. They were definitely trying every single round. But I think as the game progresses, they probably realize, holy shit, these kids are not afraid of anything. Like, And this can feel very helpless and very hard as a player when you are in a game and you feel your opponent sort of catch on fire, and you know the way they take duels with you, you know the way they rotate on the map, you know the way they're 1 second ahead of you, they always have the good reads because they're in flow state. Only the strongest of the strongest team are able to make a comeback in that scenario, and that's why it's so historical when that happens, and that's why we talk about it. But yeah, so that, to answer your question, that's how I see it. Sort of small little details who then create their own little reaction to then create their own little detail. And then, you know, it's kind of a ripple effect. That's how I see it.
Yes. I would just say this. There's a famous story that goes that when Muhammad Ali fought, I think it was George Foreman, some like really scary other boxer that was really powerful, one of the things he did psychologically to win like the battle of the mind was when he got hit by a really good shot by this boxer, he just said to him, even though it was a lie, it was gamesmanship, he just went like, is that all you got? And then the idea was that got in the guy's head, because the guy was like, fuck, he's right. That was like my best shot. Wait. And even though it was a lie, like he actually was sort of like holding in the pin and sort of the premise, you get the point, is like when you feel like I've done everything I can't win. Because I agree with you. The last thing to say is this. Spirit doesn't play the way they did in that overpass game, guys. They did that because, as Maniac said, they were up 2-0. They literally had the freedom to know we've got three maps to win. And so at that point, it's like, fuck it, let's style on these motherfuckers. And then they really did do that, which is also why on the other side, if you're Faze, that's what really breaks you. You're already down two maps. You already know it's going to be hard. Basically, you know everything almost has to go right. And then they're even doing like rando FPL Ferrari peaks onto you. Like, if that happens, you are just going to think, like, you know what? It's not my day, is it? Fucking, how long has this got to go? 40 minutes? Like, what flight are we getting? Actually, upgrade me to business. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, your party is just going to think, I've tried everything, mate. I've tried everything. Esports Bet always have all kinds of promotions running based on deposits, ways to get extra crypto, to get their esports coin. But right now they have one of their best ever that they've run, and it's for a limited time only, because to celebrate the Lunar New Year over in China, they've done a Chinese New Year Red Letter Frenzy promotion. So what you do is you go on the site here, and instead of going to the usual esports part, go to promotions, click there. You can see here, it's the one in the very top left, still going to run for 30 something days. Red envelope crazy, and basically Frenzy, what it gives you is this. You have to go here and apply it. So you have to make sure you do all the stuff here. You can contact the customer support, ask about any of the terms and conditions. If you deposit 100 USDT, you will receive an extra 100 USDT. So it's 100% match. You'll get 100,000 ESC, Esports Coin, which is their own token that you can make bets and predictions with and even convert into USDT. Check out other promotions. And even though this is CS, if you want, you can make a risk-free League of Legends bet in any tier one game. So if an LCS, LEC, LCK, LPL or PCS Spring. That has to be your first bet. Contact customer support for information. Basically, you can just make a risk-free bet. You can make a bet, and if you lose it, you get the stake back. So even though you're not a league person, one, check out Competitive Edge and stuff that we do elsewhere for league bets. But also, you can just go and basically contact the customer support, pick a nice league game and those ones, and just get a bit of extra value out of the promotion, because this is better than the usual deposit promotions, because it's to celebrate the Lunar New Year. But as a result, it runs for a limited time only. Take advantage while you can. Everyone can do this promotion. It's not a first-time deposit one, but you can only do it once, so make good use of it.